Greetings in Jesus' name. Thank you for the voices of Brother Dale. It's gonna sound a little strange, but Brother Dale led us in his song. Did you notice that? 264, take the world, but give me Jesus. In a sense, we answered the second voice of Brother Dale in song. We answered his question even before he asked it by a commitment. And I was blessed with that song, and I was very blessed with the devotion as well. It's a decision that we all have to make, and we find ourselves from time to time struggling. Thank you, Sister Sky, for your honesty and your willingness to share your testimony in that way is touching, and wanting to put this thing behind you. And I'd just like to take a moment, and to the membership here, to our church family, you've heard her confession, you heard her acknowledgement. Are you willing to forgive our sister and to pledge your support to her in prayer and encouragement? If you're willing to do that, can you just show that by standing to your feet if you're a member here? Thank you. Sky, we stand with you and want to support you. You may be seated. We know the battle is real. For a message, I invite you to 1 Corinthians 4. Some time ago, I was given this assignment, but I was in the middle of my other series, and so I let it slide. Till now, my prayer is that God would stir our hearts to a current issue that we face in America. And it's not new to us. It's something that the previous generation has become a rising thing. And I'm told that we're on the edge of facing this in a whole new way. I don't know if that's true or if that's false. But some time ago, I was given the topic of stewardship in the age of consumerism. Stewardship in the age of consumerism. I would like to divide this message into two messages. I've preached it in one several places and felt like it's not really reasonable to try to cover everything, and I'd like to give it a little more time. The other reason I'd like to give it more time is because I would like us to ponder our lives and to think about this topic. First of all, in this message, we'd like to kind of do an overview of stewardship and consumerism and this study in the Bible, and then look a bit at some of the principles of stewardship, and then move more into consumerism. And hopefully we can be blessed with this and challenged with this study. I know that I am, and that's part of the reason that I'm taking maybe a little more time with it, is because I realize that we face this philosophy almost daily, and it's a part of our thinking, this thing of needing. Anyway, we'll get more into the details of it. But I'd like to start, invite you to read, to follow along with me in 1 Corinthians 4, and we'll read verses 1 to 8. Let a man so account of us as ministers of Christ and stewards, notice the word stewards, of the mysteries of God. That's a unique statement. Stewarding the mysteries of God, written to ministers. Moreover, notice here the requirements. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. Yea, I judge not mine own self, for I know nothing by myself, yet I may not hereby justified, but he that judgeth me is the Lord. Therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who will bring to light the hidden things of darkness, and will make manifest the counsels of the heart. And then shall every man have praise of God. And these things, brethren, I have in a figure transferred to myself and to Apollos for your sakes, that ye might Learn in us not to think of men above that which is written, that no one of you be puffed up for one against another. For who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? Now ye are full, now are ye rich. Ye have reigned as kings without us, and I would to God ye did reign, that we might also reign with you. It's a good passage. A lot of thoughts in there, and we're not going to take time to comment on near all of them or dig them out. You can study that. He was addressing some of the issues that they were facing and some of the rivalry and people who endeavored to align themselves with one or another, and realizing that we're all accountable to God, and let's follow God and not men. This thought of stewards. Steward is a manager of another's goods or property. Steward is not the owner, he is the manager. It is the job of supervising or taking care. We are all stewards, and we'll look a little more directly at some of those thoughts. In an age of consumerism, what are we talking about? Just so we understand what we're talking about, age is a period of time. And how long is this time? And there's countries that we could live in today, places that we could have been born, where we would not feel like we're in a time of consumerism. But around the world, we see that consumerism is on the rise. But what is it? Well, it's been said that isms are not a good thing. They represent a lack of balance in an area and are actually a discussion of sin. Consumerism is the idea that increasing consumption of goods and services is always a desirable goal. That a person's well-being and happiness depend fundamentally on obtaining consumer goods and material possessions. Notice the idea. Notice the thought. It's an idea that the more we get and just consume upon ourselves, that's happiness. How do we define happiness? If we lost everything this week, would we gather today and still be happy? Think about those around the world who fled everything they have and are just existing with their meager existence. They left with the clothes on their backs because of war. It's happening in a lot of areas. People who've lost family and everything, and can they still, what do they have when they have the basics without the extras in life? What do we have? Consumerism is also the theory that individuals who consume goods and services in large quantities are better off. Is that true or false? The more we have, the happier we are. And something for us to consider. I don't know if you've thought about this topic. They say that historians tell us that consumerism was even taught in ancient Greece, in the Greek culture, and in world religious circles. In 1497, a friar started a fire to burn unnecessary luxuries. It was an issue that they felt like they needed to deal with way back in 1497. And you just wonder if people in history could look forward. Think of the early settlers, and we're going to go back there shortly. As they traveled and settled this land, this year's 250 years that the the newcomers and various early settlers settled here, 1775, deeded and established this church. What did they have then? If they could see down through the centuries to see us gathered here and the live, how we pull in here with our vehicles as they gathered here with their probably horses and wagons. Not sure what all they had in 1775. What would they have to tell us here? Would they sit on us with would they sit on the benches with us and commune with us and say, we're brothers, we have the same goal and vision. Anyway, think of the rise of consumerism. The American frontier life, previous to the 18th century, consisted of the basic, meager necessities of life. And the basic necessities were provided through hard and incredibly vigorous work. You know, clothing was, a lot of it was homespun. Trips spanning days were made to acquire the necessary goods that they couldn't provide for themselves. Yes, we know over time the general store, general dealers were established in the 18th and 19th centuries in many remote populated areas where mobility was limited, and a single shop, one shop, would provide for the entire community of the basic things that they couldn't make for themselves. In the early colonies, trading and bartering the local produce, what you had extra of, you took to town and traded for something that you needed. And that happened the world around in Europe. And, of course, then we had the goods transferring across the ocean, coming to America, and the trade that happened there. But the rise of consumerism refers to this significant growth of consumption and, here's another ism, materialism. Materialism, especially in Western societies, that emerged moving into the 19th and 20th century. It is described as the social and economic changes that, and here's another definition, led people to place a high value on the acquisition of goods and services, often beyond basic needs. We're looking beyond the basic needs to the extras. What were the keys leading to the rise of consumerism? Well, we have the Industrial Revolution in the 18th century, where they had factories and specialization of labor, and people focused on one thing. They got good at it, and they produced things in mass production, which lowered the cost of goods, so they made things more affordable and more accessible to larger populations. Factories could produce more products, faster, cheaper, and that just created a culture of consumption. Buy more, have more, do more, right? And live happier is the question. That is the question. We also have urbanization. People moved from the rural areas to the cities for work, and they became a part of a new economic system centered on wages and consumption, rather than subsistence farming. And we have, I would say, above average number of farmers here, and we don't even have many in our congregation. But people had a small farm where they had maybe a cow and a few chickens and some ducks and just a variety. And they went hunting and this and that, and they eked out a meager living. I don't know that we have a really good grasp on what that looked like. But then we also have the rise of the middle class. As the economies grew, so did the middle class, which had a new term called disposable income. They had extra. There was quite a while where people didn't have extra. They lived with the bare basics, and there were seasons in their life where they wondered where the next meal would come from. When you read books where they tightened their belt so they wouldn't feel the hunger, and they went another day with meager food. I'm just curious, did anyone experience that this week, where you tightened the belt for, didn't have food? Anybody? Who's hiding? No, we don't have a grasp. We don't have a clue. Disposable income allowed for the purchase of non-essential goods such as household items and fashion entertainment. Well, I'm tempted to get sidetracked. We'll keep moving. Led to the rise of advertising and marketing. And I'm it's fascinating how that we use these tools and we think they're essential. Why? Because we're caught up in all this stuff. And I'm not saying all this is wrong. But anyway, we need to find our way. In the 20th century, modern advertising and branding techniques emerged, promoting consumer products as essential to achieving a better, happier life. What are some keys in a good advertisement? If you're able to advertise your product with a smiling, happy person, you know that that's one of the keys to a good advertisement. Putting that together to make it look like this thing is key to a better, happier life. This fueled desires for new goods, creating demand where there had previously been none. I think it was, a number of months ago, past the sign, Hardy's sign, feed your happy. Feed your happy, right? And so many others, Sheets and others ride on that. Is it true? Is it what it takes? Well, also credit and financing. The introduction of consumer credit systems allowed people to purchase goods without needing to have money up front. This allowed for rapid acquisitions of items such as automobiles, appliances, and homes. People buying things they couldn't afford but buy it on tomorrow's income. Also then, we have the rise of economic prosperity in many Western countries, particularly here in the U.S., led to an era of high consumption. Suburbanization increased home ownership, and a focus on convenience and leisure contributed to mass consumerism. Yes, we grew up in a time of peace and prosperity, and I'm not sure if I finished that sentence earlier, but Trump has declared that we're on the edge of the golden age. Prosperity just ahead. Not sure if I said that earlier or thought that. Please forgive me if I said it twice. But anyway, the rise of consumerism has changed social values and norms. Here's a statement. Material possessions have began to be associated with success, happiness, and identity. How much of my identity do I find in the things that I have? What does the Bible teach us about identity? We're supposed to find our identity in who? Is that where my identity is this morning? Advertising reinforced this by encouraging people to buy products, not just for utility, not for the things that they can do, but for the image. For means of self-expression and fulfillment. And so we realize that consumer culture spread globally in the 20th century, reshaping economies and lifestyles. Even in our lifetime, consumerism has grown by leaps and bounds. I'd be curious to know, for you older ones, if you remember your first purchase, what was the first thing that you bought for yourself as a child? Do you remember what that thing was? That bigger item. I remember, I don't know if this is still a thing, I think you could send in Dum Dum wrappers and get something for them. Strange as it seems. I remember when I was young, we got the Nature Friend and I saw that they had this pump for sale for, I think it was $16, and we had a lot of fun playing in the creek, and I thought, well, this would be neat to get a pump. It said it works, would actually pump water, and so I thought, well, this would be just the thing I need. So I sent off the money, and after a few weeks, this thing came in the mail, and I opened I don't remember what it was, a little box or something, and I got out this puny little pump, and you could crank this tiny thing, and it would pump water. It actually did work, but I don't remember. I think I almost cried looking at that thing. I forget how old I was. 8 or so, And I was like, you know, this thing, throw it in the trash. It's stupid, you know? This was my little brain. But, you know, we have these all these ideas and these expectations, and then when these things aren't fulfilled, we're disappointed. But how many times do we do that as older men? We think that, you know, if I can just have this one more thing, then I'll be happy, right? Is that the way it works? One more thing? But that's what advertising is built on. I don't know, thought it would be interesting to pick up again that Sears and Roebuck catalog from, I don't know what even years that would have been, where they had the wish book and all the little things, the trinkets and toys that children could buy. And we pored over that thing back when they still made some pretty nice, decent toys readily in that thing. And anyway, had a big wish list. Well, we know how it went from that today to the department stores, eventually Walmart, today even Target, and so many. Now we can get on our phones, and with a simple few clicks, something can show up tomorrow at our doorstep. We got what we want, and now we're happy, right? What's it doing to our mentality? I was also fascinated the other day, went shopping with Fern for some clothing. And, you know, as you go through these stores, you know, when I was young, it felt like we had the basic, we had the solid shirts, and maybe we had the plaids and a few stripes and a few varieties. But today, the endless varieties. And if you don't like what Kohl's has or Walmart has, you know, go to Target. If you don't like what Target has, go to, and how many different places and how many different kinds of shirt can you buy, and then all the different prints and styles. And it's staggering. We're not looking just for clothing. We're looking for self-expression and identity. And it's fascinating how that what I'm impressed with as a good-looking shirt does not impress the next generation. Isn't that strange? And then we could have a debate about what kind of shirt should I wear. Anyway, let's push this attitude of discontentment and the need to spend our money to be happy, right? How much have we bought into the advertising ideas that, you know, if I buy this thing that can take me anywhere through the wind, rain, or, you know, you've seen these advertisements of a vehicle that can pretty much take you around the world wherever you want to go, it'll take you there. And they put that all together, and it's not even realistic. You know, if I could just purchase this sweater, it'll turn my gray hair black again, make me look young, slender, and attractive, and we'll be in sync again, right, with the young generation. Is that what it does for us? We know that there's so many lies in advertising that it's pathetic. It's not truth. And if we buy into all these things, we're only buying into a mirage in the desert, something that really will not give us what we want. It's not going to be the nourishment that we're looking for. How is this consumeristic lifestyle that we live in America, how is it impacting my life? Do we find this anywhere in the Bible? We do, and I'll take you to Luke 12. It's a familiar story, but it's good for us to ponder. An individual, I believe it's a parable, and so hopefully it's just a made-up story, right? Well, unfortunately, this is reality, and it can be a reality in our lives. Luke 12, verse 13, and of the company, and one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and beware, double warning, of covetousness. And he makes this statement, For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of things which he possesseth. Sounds like consumerism, right? The abundance of things, consuming things, things that we hold. and use and spend on ourselves. And he spake a parable and said unto them, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room to bestow my fruits. See, abundance. And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up, and here he gives the difference, so is he that layeth up treasure for himself, layeth up treasure for himself, and is not rich toward God. You see the difference? And he said unto his disciples, therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life what you shall eat, neither for your body what you shall put on. The life is more than meat, and the body more than raiment. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feedeth them. How much more are ye better than the fowls? And which of you, with taking thought, can add to his stature one cubit? If ye then be not able to do that thing which is least, why take ye thought for the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not. And yet I say unto you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothe the grass which is today in the field, and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O ye of little faith? And seek not what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, neither be ye of doubtful mind, for all these things do the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knoweth that they have need of these things. But rather seek ye the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell that ye have, and give alms. Provide yourselves bags which wax not old, a treasure in the heavens that faileth not, where no thief approacheth, neither moth corrupteth. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where did the rich man go wrong? Where did the rich man go wrong? Was it wrong that he was a farmer? Was it wrong that he had bountiful crops? Was it wrong that he had a bigger crop than a barn? And we know that all those answers are no. He was doing what God wants all of us to do, to labor and to work for our sustenance. But he had too many. Was it wrong to build a bigger barn? And the answer is no, not necessarily. But as I pointed out, I pointed out a little later on. But in verse 19 is where he went wrong. Look what he said to himself, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. And so that was a fact. He had a lot of things. But what he said was, I have supply for many years, and so take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. I have all that I need. I'm just going to live it up. I'm going to consume all these things on myself. He forgot some of the principles that we read earlier in 1 Corinthians 4. I'd just like to give you a few principles of stewardship, and not going to get nearly as far as I'd even hope, but we'll get started. Faithful stewardship, just a few principles of faithful stewardship. Faithful stewardship, I don't know if you noticed, but it's repeated a number of times in 1 Corinthians 4, this whole thought, the faithful stewards view God as the owner of all things and we as his stewards. Just a simple principle. It's the whole principle of stewardship. God is the owner. We are his stewards. Verse 7 said, for who maketh thee to defer? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? And if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? You know, this is mine instead of, and this is my glory. And no, we should be saying, this is God's glory. I'm just using this, and it's not even mine. The earth is the Lord's in the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. Psalm 24:1. It's easy to view the things as it's things that we have earned. It's ours, but it is not ours. We are the stewards. And that's just, it's not only things, it's our gifts, our abilities. When we forget God, it's where we go in our thinking, and it's so wrong. It's good for us to remember God is the owner because it reminds us of our accountability. Secondly, faithful stewards take their responsibility seriously. Yes, 1 Corinthians 4 reminds us that there is a judgment coming where God will bring forth all of the hidden things, the things that we don't see, our thoughts and our intent, our motivations, who we really are and why we're doing what we're doing, why we buy things, our identity in them. God will reveal all those things. And either we will receive the praise of God, it says that we will receive the praise of God, or will receive his condemnation. God is the judge, and we need to take our responsibilities seriously. Thirdly, faithful stewards have an awareness of our available resources. What are the things that I am accountable for? We tend to forget everything that we have. We tend to forget the things that we can be using. We think of time. Time is another year. Already in 2025, and we have the year before us. What are we doing with our time? Are we consuming it upon ourselves is a question. Is it all about me? Is it my plans? Money. I don't know if I mentioned it here. I might have recently, but the American passports, it gets us into 117 countries. We can use that for ourselves. We can use that for God. Our prayers, what are we consumed with? Is it praying for ourselves and us, or are we using the opportunity of prayer for others? And I know that I've often reminded you of number four, but I'll put it in here. Faithful stewards move with a sense of urgency in the window of opportunity. And this is just such a reminder again and again. Again, with the passing of another generation, and we look at how the mantle falls from the oldest down to the next in line. And the torch is passed from generation to generation. And every rising generation has these windows of opportunity from childhood, those opportunities to youth, to middle age, to being older and grandpas and beyond. And as we move through life, we have that season. There is a time and a season for us to exercise our gifts and opportunities. And if we resist God's will and call for us in that season of our life, we will lose the opportunity and then we will lose the blessing. A time to plant, a time to cultivate, a time to harvest, and then the blessing or the judgment of God. Well, number five, faithful stewards labor diligently and honestly to provide necessary items. Ephesians 4:28, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. And we're taught today that you go to school and get your schooling, and then you go out and find the easiest and highest paying job that you can. Somewhere you can sit around and punch a few buttons and then pull a paycheck, mostly for showing up. And America is losing its ability to even function. Talked about places where with the new immigration laws, the immigrants are disappearing. And in some areas, the immigrants are the fabric of the people who are willing to do the hard jobs, the repairmen, construction people, and there's people questioning if American society in certain areas will be able to go on productively without people who are willing to give honest, hard labor. And it's something to think about. And I believe that we're entering a time where that will become more highly valued and worth a lot more than what it has been in the past. Lastly, I'd like to give you number 6. Faithful stewards' choices are guided by long-range values, not momentary self-gratification. And we're going to look more of that. That's an in-depth word study of the word simplicity. But either we're guided by long-range goals and values or momentary gratification. And this is one of the big differences between children and adults. And a child lives by the moment. What's for me in the moment? And you can give children a piece of candy and tell them that, you know, if you look at this and eat this now, that's all you get. But if you wait 5 minutes or if you wait an hour, I'll give you a lot more. It's worth the wait. And studies show that most children they look at that thing and maybe they'll wait a little, but majority of children will eat that. But as adults, we know that, hey, if waiting brings better reward, it's certainly worth the wait. And most of us would wait for more. But momentary gratification, it's a principle of life that we are guided by long-range values. And the Bible is full of them, but we're not going to take the time for that. We're just going to stop, and I pray that you'll let this subject, you'll ponder the verses we read, 1 Corinthians 4, and also the story there, and that we would not be a part of the generation that lives for today and misses out on God's blessing in eternity ahead. So let's resist this thing again this week of living it up and having my happiness based on things. Let's kneel for prayer.